In this week's episode, we have Christy with Mountainside Media. And y'all, analytics and data is not my thing, but it's definitely Heather's. So come enjoy as I drag myself along this conversation and actually end up learning quite a bit. Hope you do too.
We are gathered here today to bring together the wedding community. Whether you are a seasoned pro, a newbie planning to start your own wedding business, or an engaged couple hoping to see behind the scenes, we're here to share tips, tricks, and laughs with you as we talk weddings. The Union Podcast is a show that aims to build a community for those in the wedding planning trenches. Join Jamie Wolfer, Heather Laurie Fear, and special guests in roundtable discussions about the challenges and joys of the wedding business. And now, here come your hosts, Jamie and Heather.
I love your videos.
Oh,
I
I'm love, so glad.
Love your videos. Yeah.
Thanks for taking time to watch some of them.
And not to like derail this whole podcast, but one of the things I've noticed about you and some other really successful YouTubers is there seems to be sort of this parallel universe for the YouTubers who are doing it very well between how shorter TikTok videos are being produced and how shorter YouTube videos are being produced. Now, short in YouTube can be like 3 minutes, 6 minutes, 10 minutes, but you have that really energetic, authentic, raw vibe to your videos that makes you credible.
I really appreciate that.
For younger people. And this is important, right? Because the difficult part of being in the wedding industry is that our clients are essentially staying in the same age range and we are getting older.
I know.
Means that gap gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm seeing this with older millennials now, right? Who are on the lean side of 40 and their rebellion against TikTok. And I'm like, dude, 10 years ago when you got married, your wedding vendors were rebelling against Instagram and you thought that they were the lamest, most out of touch people ever. So what exactly are you talking about with this TikTok rebellion? Like, come on.
Yeah. Oh,
that's a good point. Yeah.
I know. Heather's been just for me, platform wise, I feel like there's so many sometimes. And Heather's like, we should really get on TikTok. Cause I did it and I was steady. I think I got like a whole 30 videos out. And then I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
That's what I'm saying. I think for you, it might be unnecessary because it's not the platform that counts. We could talk about this in terms of how I understand that through lens of data and metrics, but it's not the platform that counts. It's your ability to stay relevant to your audience.
Right.
And so if you as a YouTuber understand that the way that we're communicating looks and feels a certain way, and TikTok just happens to exemplify that, and you take that information and that insight and you port it over to the platform that you're most comfortable on, you will succeed. It's not about TikTok. It's about how people are consuming information and how content producers are producing compelling content. I'm going to free you from the responsibility of being on TikTok because you are still communicating to that audience. And also PS, that audience, they are huge YouTubers. They look to YouTube for everything from how to clean the toilet before mother-in-law comes to what is that noise my car is making? And can I change my own bumper? And I mean, it's like everything. They turn to YouTube and TikTok all day long.
Yeah. YouTube is the second most used website in the world. It's secondary
and by a lot of people, like older, like any generation. You got old farts on there, young folks on there. You know, it's, I think if I were to invest in one platform personally that I think has the most longevity, first of all, I invested in YouTube in 2012 with my last job because I was like, Google owns it. So it's a search engine and people like watching videos more than reading. So I was not wrong. And this is not a flash in the pan for YouTube.
Right.
But you got to do it right. You can't just like get on YouTube, like with this background and talk at it.
Right.
Nobody cares.
Right. Yeah.
Too boring.
It's been a learning curve. I mean, obviously if you've seen any of my beginning videos, and this is not how I talk in YouTube videos, you just like, you got to crank it up a little bit more. You got to use some hand motions, especially if you're static, otherwise you're going to lose them. Both of my parents are public speakers. So watching them growing up and watching how they engage a crowd was key for me to figure out how this works and how to be compelling. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Because just vocal inflection. I'm like, come on, guys, like do something with your voice, please. So yeah, your commentary and your compliments, that means a lot. I really do appreciate that. It's been a very fun platform to be on. We'll probably still proceed with the whole TikTok idea only because I have 3 years worth of content that we can recycle. So why not catch them and get them at the top of the funnel?
Of course.
And get them over. But at least I definitely don't feel that need to be, well, I want to be the cool TikToker, but I don't have time to be the cool TikToker. So I'm just going to be like me on TikTok and hope for the best, you know?
I think you'll be
Have you had Jose Rolón on your podcast yet?
No.
Ooh, who?
Do you know who Jose Rolón is?
I have not heard of Jose Rolón.
NYC gay dad or gay NYC dad or something like that. He is a wedding planner in New York City who, of course, New York City got shut down with New Rochelle being ground zero last March. And he's widowed and he has 3 kids. Mm-hmm. And he was doing TikTok. He's more like lifestyle stuff now. But the point is that, again, different platforms lend themselves to different things. And maybe you don't need to educate your clients on TikTok. Maybe they want to see a little bit more about like who you are and what you believe and all that kind of stuff. But he was on Good Morning America by the end of 2020 because people were just, and it was this like authentic behind the scenes look at what it's like to raise 3 kids during a pandemic when you're a single dad. Mm. And so he knows TikTok though.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see about getting him on here, but
no, dig on.
Thank you for the lead. I'm just going to say this has already been a really interesting conversation. So I just say we start from what's already been going on here.
Yes.
We just talked about TikTok on a recent episode, and I think this kind of gives a new perspective and some insight that is very wise. So thank you for bringing that to the table.
Well, thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself? I mean, I think at this point we probably should introduce you because, you know, we're a couple minutes in here and you're the Mr. Gal on the show.
I'm Christy Osborne. I'm from Mountainside Media, and I believe that data is more important than drama.
Ooh. Oh, what a tagline. Oh, I like it.
You like that?
I like that. Wait, okay. How'd you come up with that though?
How did I come up with that? I don't know. I don't know how I came up with that.
So obviously you guys have been here.
I think it wasn't data, not drama. It was something else. I was listening to like a life coach podcast because that's my jam. I am literally, everybody thinks I'm going to be like this intimidating, nerdy Poindexter, but really I'm like this woo-woo, crazy Californian, crystal kissing, meditative journey type of squishy person. So I listen to a lot of life coach podcasts. And I actually think it was Brooke Castillo, and she's all about drama this and drama that, and, you know, leave your drama at the door. And I don't know. I don't think she uses the term data, not drama, but I think it came kind of amalgamating things like that.
Inspired by that sort of
thing. And my other one, which is not mine, but I also don't know where I picked it up from, is, and a lot of people hear me say it, it's marketing, not magic. Right? It's math, not magic. It's people are like, here's $10, go on to Facebook and make me $1 million by the end of the month. And I'm like, that's not how that works. Like, that's not.
Wait, it's not? That's not how it
works. Turns out. I'm like, oh, you only get 500 people to your website in one inquiry a month and you have a 10% close rate. This math doesn't look good for you.
It's not looking great. It's not looking great.
So yeah, it's math, not magic. It's marketing, not magic. But I would love to talk, you know, I was actually super excited about this podcast today because I'm on a mission lately because a dear, dear friend of mine in the industry, another consultant, loves to tell me how data isn't sexy, right? Mm-hmm. She's just like, data's not sexy. Nobody wants to hear it. It's not the tablescape. It's not Pantone's color of the year. Like, you're just going to have to sex it up. And I rebel against this a lot because I think data might not be sexy, but it can be insightful and exciting to get some clarity, right? There's the woo. You want to get clarity? Like, go to your data. Stop fooling around with your tarot cards or whatever, right? Yeah. It's there. The answers are there. But I've also heard from her, you know, when she's like, data is not sexy. When I started to peel back the layers of that, when it comes from a creative, it's like, well, what's not sexy about it? Like, what's not sexy about making money? Because that's what data is going to tell you. And I realized that people don't know how to actually engage and have an active conversation with their numbers. They they think that their numbers hold some sort of authority or some sort of inherent meaning that they're afraid they don't understand. Mm-hmm. And so I've been on a mission, especially this past year, as I've been talking more about analytics and people have been turning to ads to try to solve problems that they're not going to solve with ads. We could talk about that as well. But I've been trying to get them to engage differently and feel more comfortable looking at, quote unquote, their numbers so that they are excited to go to that like magic ape or that crystal ball and find the answers. And it's actually less about the numbers than you would think. And I find that when I start talking to creatives about what it is really about, they feel a little bit liberated.
Yeah. I mean, I know for me, I am not the numbers gal at all. Like I'm the creative, Heather's the tech. Like,
right.
It's like, I have access to all of the websites that her and I share. We have hosted stuff on together and I'll still text her and be like, hey, what's this number at? I did it yesterday, the day before?
Yes, she does.
I could have looked it up myself and I didn't.
I'm here for you.
What number? Do you mind my asking?
Oh, we were looking at our monthly recording revenue.
How is that not sexy?
I mean,
it's a good number.
Sexiest number anybody could ever look
at. It's a good number. It's a good number. Like we are very proud of that number right now. I'm overwhelmed by how proud we are. But at the same time, I'm like, I get sucked into the numbers and I'm like, well, is that a good sign? Is that a bad sign? Is that a good sign? Is that a bad sign?
Well, let's talk about that. Is it trending up or down?
Oh, it's trending up. It's trending up.
It's trending up.
We just did a test this last week. So for some of the listeners who are doing normal wedding planning stuff and not online virtual wedding planning stuff, this isn't super helpful, but we did a tester of to our really old people on our list. We did a tester of a 7-day trial of our subscription. So we were like rolling out a new offer basically. And so we're just seeing of that 7-day free trial group, how does it stick? Like, does it actually convert? Do people stick around as long as they do when they buy it intentionally in a normal scenario?
And do you have answers yet? Or are you still waiting for the data to come in?
We're waiting for the data to come in. So we have about 36 more hours approximately until I have all the data. And then I can really tell, you know, how did this convert? How did this offer compare to our normal offer? And then especially because we're pitching it basically to an audience that in a way is like kind of outdated. It's a little bit old. And with the wedding industry, you know, the timing is everything. Like if you're marketing stuff to people who've already booked vendors of your niche, like you're out of luck. It's doesn't matter how amazing you seem to them because they've already booked someone.
That's exactly right.
We interrupt this podcast because there is something extremely special that I want to share with you guys. I don't know about you, but for the last who knows how many years, I've been using a Frankenstein Googled copied and pasted contract. And while that is extremely embarrassing to admit to all of our listeners, I know that there are people out there who feel the same as I do. And there were a couple things that kept me from actually getting an attorney drafted contract. Actually, no, there was one thing. It was so expensive and it seemed so out of reach. That's when I learned about Legally Set. You see, Coonby with Legally Set has created industry specific contracts for people like you and me working in the wedding industry. They're easy to customize. They're drafted by an actual attorney and not Google. Can you imagine that? And last but not least, they are so extremely affordable. So if you were like me and maybe using a less than appropriate and or legal contract, it's time to step up your game. You have no more excuses. Head on over to theunionpodcast.com/legallyset to check them out.
And also, I just want to point out that oftentimes when folks, creatives or business owners get reports from somebody, right? Like an agency. This used to drive me crazy when I hired agencies, right? And it was analytics karaoke, right? Like they're just reading the numbers that I can see. And I'm like, BFD, like what is going, like who cares? And so I think that that lends itself to wedding and event pros and creative folks thinking that they're supposed to know something when those numbers are being recited to them. And the answer is no. This whole conversation, this mini conversation that we had was, you know, hey, Jamie, what numbers are you looking at? Jamie's like, my most important one, monthly recurring revenue. P.S. That's the most important number for all of us. So if you're wondering where to start with your analytics, start with your money. Mm-hmm. Right? The end. So that's not hard. Now we have a little bit of momentum. And I asked you, is it trending up or down? And you said up. And then you said, And also we're trying something new with a different product line. And we want to know if it will be successful in these ways. Will people stay? Are they going to churn out? Are they going to buy or purchase differently? So now we have a set of questions that we've just asked. You know, is my monthly revenue trending up or down? And when I launch this new product, what am I going to see? Am I going to see this or that? Am I going to see more revenue or less? Am I going to see more engagement or less? Am I going to see a bigger lifetime customer value or less? And then once you have that set of questions that you want to know, then you figure out how to measure it to see if you were right or if you're on the right track. And that's all data and analysis is. And Heather, you do it naturally because that's your jam.
Yeah. It's right? Like an experiment to me. It's really fun. I'm just like, ooh, what are we going to find today? This work? I don't know. We're going
to try. But Jamie, if I said to you, I said, you're going to be the analytics co-pilot. Your job every single month is to ask really good questions about how your marketing is performing. And that's what any small business owner's job is, whether they've hired an analyst like me or they're just looking at their Google Analytics. Their job is just to ask the good questions, right? Mm-hmm. And then try to figure out what numbers can I look at that would give me an answer to this question.
Right. And in your perspective, what are the most key data points people should be looking at? Obviously, MRR, monthly recurring revenue, is important. For those of you who don't have recurring revenue off your clients, you know, I guess it would just be income or sales for the month. And then from there, kind of conversions, leads. I mean, you're basically looking at each point where some sort of conversion or action is taken place by your clients. So if they have to opt in, and then do they buy, and like, where are they at in this process?
Yeah, that's a great question. So basically when people come to me, they generally come to me for ads or analytics, and they generally want ads or analytics because they don't feel like they're making enough money. So that question's answered for me. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I actually look at, it's pretty simple. I want to make sure that they're able to target and attract a high quality audience that is able and willing to do business with them. Mm-hmm. Right. So I can look at their revenue and they can say up or down, like, yeah, I'm satisfied, I'm dissatisfied. And if they're talking to me, they're dissatisfied. And I can fool around with like base, you know, like, well, what if you, is it trending up or down? But the number one thing over the years I have found is a determiner of whether or not I can move the needle quickly for them. And it also determines the next step we will take to try to move the needle is whether or not that the audience they're attracting is qualified to do business with them. Ooh. And so from wedding and event industry standpoint, I like to look at their website analytics first. The reason why the website is still important, even though everybody's doing their research on Instagram, like I get it, I understand, I follow all the trends, is that Instagram is like inherently disorganized. Like you have a feed and you got all this rando stuff on it, you got reels and you have IGTV and a real wedding and some advice posts and a like a junk show, right? When somebody is at the point where they're considering doing business with you and they need information to vet you, what's it like to do business with you? What kind of services do you offer? How much do you cost? Maybe I can find that on your website, maybe not. And then what is the next step I take in order to inquire? That's all so neatly organized on your website. And PS, young people know how to use websites. And PS, young people know that websites are more organized than social media. So people still will visit websites all the time. Mm-hmm. They'll visit it on their mobile phone, but they'll visit websites. And so the first thing I look at from an analytics standpoint is I go in and I make sure that the majority of traffic that's coming in makes sense for their geographical target. So if you're in Greenville, South Carolina, and you're getting a whole bunch of rando traffic from California, New York, and Texas, because numerically they're the biggest states in the union, you have a quality traffic problem. We need more local traffic. And then also it's a little extra setup. You have to click a little box. And when you're setting up Google Analytics, that says that you want to collect demographic and interest data. Hmm. But once you click that box, you can also see the age and gender of your traffic. So I had a wedding planner in Chicago say, my demographics are off. I'm getting a lot of middle-aged men. And she said, why is that? Now I'm an analyst, not a psychic, right? Yeah. So I was like, I don't know. Why do you think it is? Right? Like, I don't have the context. I don't know what's going on. What do you think is going on? Which is a great question for anybody to ask, right? I'm looking at my Google Analytics. What do I think is going on here? She says, oh, well, my husband's a sportscaster on Chicago radio station. Do you think that could have anything to do with it? I was like, maybe. You think?
Maybe.
A little bit.
Right. And so now we've identified not the right target market to do business with her. And now we can start to brainstorm from a more strategic perspective how we're going to correct that. Right? How are we going to stop that kind of traffic from coming in? So that's the first step that I always take. Is there enough traffic coming to the website? Aim for 1,200 to 2,500 sessions for small local event businesses. And is it qualified to do business with you?
Wow.
Jamie, what are you getting from all these numbers and data and words?
You know, the word part I got, like I got the words, I got words for days. I do still struggle with finding it to be a saucy experience. Like I do my best to understand the numbers that I need to know and I get out. I don't want to sit in it.
I'm doing this because I'm clapping. Hello.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You liberated your audience now. It's like liberation station today.
Yeah.
That is exactly what you should be doing. There's 185 standard out of the box reports in Google Analytics. There's a bajillion different ways to customize your analytics.
Yeah.
The only thing you need to do is to get in and get out with the questions and answers that you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah. It's not just people are going like, in there e-commerce? For fun.
No.
Yeah. You don't need to be in there every day for fun. Just staring at it. Mm-mm. It won't make the numbers improve.
No.
Staring at them.
I think for me, I attach my self-worth to what those numbers are telling me. And that's something that I have to work through emotionally. That's with YouTube analytics. That's with Instagram post engagement. That's with our monthly recurring revenue. Am I getting people into the sales funnel correctly? You know? So that's, I think, why I find the numbers the most daunting is because they're real. They're honest. Like if I log in and things are down low or the analytics of the five numbers that I know I need to know are not as good as they were before, that's why it's such an emotional experience for me because I tend to live in that creative space. Although I'm quite a logical person. When I jump into analytics, it can be really hard for me. So how do you convince other creatives to get excited about data? Because like, I don't, I just get the information I need and I get out.
Well, can I just ask some clarifying questions before I, what answers do you need that you're going in there and getting and pulling out?
Well, it depends on the platform, but like for YouTube, I want to make sure that we're seeing the right amount of engagement. That we are, so are my titles hitting well enough? Are my thumbnails effective? Is the face I'm making in the thumbnail effective? Are we seeing any sort of drop off on people clicking? What's my click-through rate? I don't rest in those. I try to just create and hope for the best. But every once in a while, when I'm checking in with those numbers, I need to make sure that like, I have not gone off the rails somehow for some reason. We've got a pretty effective rhythm happening here. So I know that it's going to be really hard for me to like take a hard right. It's just probably not going to happen, but I don't get excited about that. It's like going to the doctor for a checkup. That's what I feel like. I'm like, I don't want to check in. I'm just hoping things are for the best. And I'm not excited about looking at them.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think what you're saying to me is good for me to think about as well. Because as I hear you talking, there's a couple of things that come to my mind as a data and analytics perspective. But the other thing is maybe, unlike how I framed this up with my friend saying data is not sexy. Yeah, maybe we just all admit that data is like going to the doctor and you have to do it. And they're going to ask you like really personal questions and, you know, probe really personal areas. And then you're going to leave and you're going to get a clean bill of health. And if you don't, you're going to have, you know, a diagnosis and a way to heal yourself, right? Like that's it. So maybe it's not fun going into your analytics.
Yeah.
And also, if you have cancer, you want to know about it early so you can treat it and not die. Right? Because now we can treat early stages of cancer pretty effectively in this world, right? If you know that your website is malfunctioning and you get all this engagement on YouTube and you get this huge click-through rate, but for some reason you're not getting any more customers, and this happens a lot in the event industry on social media, they are social media stars and they come to me and they're like, why aren't I getting it? And I'm like, wow, you know, you're getting all this engagement, thumbs up, and getting people visiting your website. That's really great. Your website sucks. Fix it.
Doctor's orders,
right? Yeah. And now we know, because without going to the doctor and getting that prognosis, you know, oh, you know, you have whatever, right? Yeah. Your cholesterol's up. It could be very minor, fix it now. So it's not something major because you ignored it. And you are like, but I like eating ice cream and watching, you know, I like Instagram. That's where I'm good at things. You know, just take your medicine,
yeah.
Eat your vegetables.
All of that. I really think of what you're looking at is like in your business, you have this conveyor belt, you're guiding people from they just found you to being a client. And along the way, there are like transitions where you can lose them. And you're basically going in to look at the data points to make sure you didn't lose them at those key moments. And it's really easy to have no idea you're losing people. That you're not putting enough people onto the conveyor belt, because there's going to be like percentages that drop off naturally and are still good. Like you could drop from 1,000 people to 10 people, and that's good in certain conversion rates. So I think it's also, Jamie, for you being sensitive about like, oh, this didn't go that well. It's also knowing like the audience you're speaking to isn't all going to be buyers. Like there's only going to be a small percentage that actually convert into a buyer. So having realistic expectations of what is good and what is sustainable. And sometimes something hits really well and it does way better than normal or average, and being kind of kind to yourself on that.
Yeah,
that's correct. And to your point, and I know we're talking about numbers, and I was kind of thinking about this. I was like, am I going to do math? Because people who get on strategy calls with me know that I ask them to like open their kimono and tell me all their numbers. And then I just like do math and fling math at them. And I'm like, you got some problems here and some problems there. But to your point about if you get 1,000 people and then 10 people take action, that is actually the gold standard for benchmarking, if you don't have any other data, for most things in marketing. And that is exactly a 1% conversion rate or a 1% click-through rate. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the days of like 80% email open rates with a cold audience, those are long gone. If you're going to get any kind of open rate above 50%, that audience is not cold. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being able to understand and manage like some of the expectations and some of the numbers is a big part of it. And I think to Jamie's point, this is just a matter of like eating your vegetables, you know, taking your medicine, going to the doctor, however you want to do it, but you don't live at the doctor's office, right? You're not in the hospital. So just do it and get out. And there's a couple of benchmarks that I tend to use in the wedding industry that have served me well as a starting point. And that is, if you're running any kind of ads or you are asking people to take any kind of action, whether that's leaving a comment, taking a poll, visiting your website, if you are new or talking to a new audience or talking for the first time, if you can try to get to that 1% click-through rate, that would be great. And if you're not very good at math, you know, you just take whatever number your audience is and add a decimal point at the very, very end and then move it over to the left twice. And that should be your 1% click-through rate. So that will go up as you start getting more sophisticated in your marketing, but that's always, always the benchmark for moving somebody off of a platform onto your website. And then again, if you're new and they're just visiting your website for the first time, and you have services that are typically in the multiple thousands of dollars, they need a minute to make a decision. So if you have between 1 and 3% conversion rate, meaning that people actually inquire about your services on your website, that's a nice place to start. And then you start to engage with your analytics to see what that initial conversion rate is. And then you start asking yourself, can I move the needle on this? If I have 1%, can I get to 3%? And then one thing you said, Heather, a couple of minutes back when we first started talking about your new product, as I said, do you have any answers? Are you still gathering data? And you said, I'm still gathering data. We have 3 days to go. Mm-hmm. So that's another really important aspect of measurement. Measurement becomes meaningful when you measure things over time and you have multiple data points. You know, if you're measuring month over month or week over week, you have a comparison. If you have 3 data points and you measure 3 months or 3 weeks or 4 months or 4 weeks, now you can start to identify possible trends.
Yeah.
So that time horizon becomes really important to making some data-based decisions and getting out of the drama of whether or not you need to be on TikTok. Probably not. You probably need to fix your website.
Yeah, I think the website on our end is probably a key, and we are working on it.
Right, we are.
It's being overhauled because in our situation, well, and I should say like Jamie as the front person, Jamie's situation, I'm in the background, that there is a huge audience that is coming in from varied places with varied intentions. And we have this podcast. We have our mastermind for folks who listen to the podcast. We have couples who follow Jamie who want to hire her full out as like a local planner. We have people who want to be a virtual client. We have people who want to do all sorts of things. So we basically need to help guide them to buckets so that we can then get the data of like, what is the spread of who is coming to our site? And just like you said, with that example of someone having a bunch of, you know, their husband's radio fans going to their website. And it's like, that's a cool demographic, not really super helpful for their business. So right, it's like right. figuring that out is like, who are these different people and where do you guide them?
But most event planners don't have that.
Right.
Right. Right. Like you have one client there in between these ages, they live in this area and they have one mission and you have one mission and your mission is to give them enough information and invite them to take the next logical step in their booking journey in order to make a sale. That's your job during the consult, but in order to make a decision to, you know, reach out to you and inquire.
To shortlist so, you, basically.
To shortlist you. And what we haven't talked about is you're actually measuring two things. You're actually measuring one thing with two components. You're measuring your ability to get the right message out to the right audience at the right time, right? So we're talking about your target markets, your ideal clients that also live in this place and are this age and this gender. It's the right audience, the right message for the right time, right? Because if I've just started planning my wedding and all I want to figure out is, do I want a big wedding or a small wedding? Do I want it to be indoors or outdoors? And do I want to have a local or a destination wedding? The way you attract people and build authority for yourself when your ideal clients have those questions is completely different from when they're closer in the booking journey and they're like, which photographer should I choose? One that does fine art photography or journalistic photography, right? So the content that you're putting out needs to make sense to wherever people are in the booking journey. You have to cover it all. And then what you're measuring is your ability to move people from one stage to another and keep them engaged with your content. So you're measuring human behavior.
We interrupt this week's podcast for Jamie to use a weird voice to talk about something she's really excited about. You guys, I will never stop talking about HoneyBook. You know I'm obsessed with this platform. It is just the most comprehensive way for me as a wedding planner to make sure I'm tracking my clients, keep all the files in the same exact place, keep all of our communication centralized, and to make sure I don't double book, because I know that's the nightmare of so many of us. Right now, HoneyBook is offering 50% off a one-year subscription, which is absolutely insane. I don't know why they didn't offer this when I first signed up. To be honest, I'm a little bit bitter, but you have the awesome opportunity of taking advantage of this today. So if you are interested, head on over to theunionpodcast.com/honeybook and sign up today. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep talking about it. Actually, I'm probably going to keep talking about it anyways. So you should just go sign up.
When Jamie, you said that you were looking at your YouTube video, and we can kind of put a placeholder in for event pros with their social media.
Yeah.
When they're measuring engagement on their social media, that's great. But what does it mean? It means that those people are interested in your content. Great. What's the next logical step in their booking journey that they can take that you can measure that shows them that they're still interested in possibly doing business to you? Well, for you, Jamie, and I think for most people, you talked about click-through rates. Mm-hmm. Right? So when you're on social media, engagement means that they're interested in your content, not interested in your service. Mm-hmm. Click-through rate means that they're interested in your service.
Yep.
Right? So now we're starting to like take some of these numbers that we're awash in all the time. And you hear marketers chatting about it. Know your numbers. And you're like, okay, I think my engagement's good. Well, what does that mean? It just means people are interested in your content, not you, not your services.
Right.
How do you gauge whether or not they're interested in your services? You ask them to visit your gallery and they did. And now you know they're interested. Now you know they're interested in your work. How do you know that they're interested in doing business with you from the gallery? You ask them to visit your services page and they did. Mm-hmm. And now you're measuring that entire journey. And what you're actually measuring is not engagement. You're measuring people's response to you and your brand.
Mm-hmm. Almost like your call to action and how you phrase it and how it's shared is will immediately reflect in your click-through rate, how it's phrased, what you're selling, what you're trying to get them to do. Those two, your CTA equals your CTR.
Yeah.
Am I growing before your very eyes?
Growing and
before my very eyes.
You can clap again if you want to. You can clap again.
This is so exciting.
No, I love that. I love linking it that closely. It's why I might steal that.
I think it's also important, again, to think of it as an experiment, because you're going to try some things that are not going to work and you're going to have to make adjustments. And everyone's going to look at the system they have, this process they're guiding people through towards becoming a buyer, and they're going to find pieces that are not working as well as they want. And then when things are working perfectly, something else is going to change and some rule in some social media land is going to change and you're going to have to adjust again. So it's just the name of the game. And I think that's why you have to really fall in love with this process of tinkering and learning to spot where the chinks are in this process so you can like adjust it and fix it and make it better and improve all the time.
And celebrate your wins. Now, this is a little bit harder when you're in Google Analytics and you're looking at all of that like tabula data and the freaking pie charts, and you're just like, nobody gets up in the morning and says, I want to look at one more goddamn spreadsheet or tabular layout in Google Analytics, right? Like, nobody says that. And this is not easy to do. So I don't want to be disingenuous about it. But what I have taken to recently in the past year, when I don't do Google Analytics reports anymore, I used to and I don't. What I do is I build custom dashboards in Data Studio, which is not easy to use. So I'm not trying to be like, oh, in this podcast, you're going to walk away and know how to like do Data Studio. The point is this about celebrating your wins. When I build out dashboards, everything is visualized. So if I talk about a funnel, I actually make a funnel in there. It's a picture of a funnel with your numbers in the funnel. So you can kind of understand that visually.
Yeah.
But everything is formatted conditionally. So as the data is coming into the dashboard is kind of pre-chewing it for my clients. And it comes in as a red number, a yellow number, or a green number. And I have never met a person that has all green numbers, meaning that everything is functioning at full capacity and maximum capacity. And all we have to do is like dial everything up and collect our checks. Nor have I ever, ever, ever seen a murder scene in the dashboard where everything is red. And so when I say celebrate your wins, understand that as you're trying to move people from one part of the booking journey to another and measure that, you're going to have areas where you are a stinking rock star. And maybe that is with social media engagement, or maybe your website converts, but you're never on social like me, right? Celebrate those wins and be like, oh, that's part of my marketing that I actually don't have to fix. And I don't have to worry about because it works really well. You could take all of that effort worrying about all the things all the time and all the channels and whether or not you have to be on TikTok and focus that energy into the one or two areas that are failing. And it's really nice because to your point, Heather, now you're freed from doing all the things all the time. And you also have a level of clarity about what you can leave well enough alone for a minute and re-divert energy and resources into fixing the things that really do need to be fixed, probably your website.
Probably. It seems the website is a concern.
You see a pattern here.
Well,
that is the trend I'm seeing. Okay. Yeah, everybody's website can be cleaned up a little bit, right?
And you mentioned that most people are using their phones too. So I think that's something that people don't probably reflect on enough, is that you have to make a website that works really well in mobile. And I know for us, we kept forgetting that. We would make sales pages and then like 2 weeks later, I'd be like, I got to check that on the phone. And I'd go and I'd be like, oh dear Lord, this is a disaster. And be like, yes. This is, people have been looking at this. Oh boy. And
yeah.
So something like that being missed in the process is really going to throw that whole conveyor belt.
You know, a good reminder for you for that and for your audience as well. If you're ever working with a web developer and they email you a link and you look at it and the website's beautiful, take that link and copy it and text it to a colleague or a friend and say, hey, my designer just sent me my new website. Will you take a look at it? Because they're going to get it on their phone and open it. And then they're going to be like, what? And then you can click on it because you texted it and be like, oh no, right? So if you send it, because we're on email and we're looking at everything from a desktop, but yeah. Next time that happens, send it to Jamie and be like, hey, I'm going to text you the link to our new website. Check it out. Jamie will pick up her phone and click on it and be like, You're fired.
Yeah, she'll be like, Heather, have you been drinking wine all day? What are you doing?
Listen, no shame in the wine game. Analytics are not, they're not going to be for everybody. I know that for sure. As a party.
Still not for you. I still haven't convinced you. Come on now.
Listen, I am never going to be like, ooh, it's just, they exist. It's still going to be a doctor's office, but it's not always going to be a bad report that I'm going home with. But for those who are like brand new to all of this, because we do have a lot of newbie planners who are just getting started with their business. As we wrap this up, what is, like, if you had to boil it down, what would be a solid piece of advice that you could give the brand newbies who we may have scared the living daylights out of with this podcast? You know, they may have gotten to the end of this. They're like white knuckling it. They're like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. What would your advice to them be?
I would say, think of it the way you think of your accounting and hiring an accountant, right? You don't have to know how to make accounting spreadsheets or run all the reports in QuickBooks or even what tax laws are for you if you're hiring a CPA, but you have to be able to ask the question, like, did I make enough money this year? With your analytics, if you don't want to do analytics, you can hire somebody, right? Or you can take a course or whatever it is, but you have to be able to somehow answer the question, is my marketing making me money? And that is it, right? You have convinced me, Jamie, not to evangelize to everybody that they should love analytics as much as I do, but they should incorporate analytics into their business in service of marketing the same way that you incorporate general good accounting practices into your business in service of being profitable.
That makes sense. It's just a matter of reformatting what you've assigned it to in your mind.
Yes, because how many people have I seen on the internet or have come to my doorstep saying, I just spent $10,000 on a website and I really don't have any money to spend on anything else, but the website doesn't seem to be making money. Can you help me? And the answer is no, because I charge for my services. But that $10,000 investment may or may not have been a good one. And that $10,000 spend could have been avoided and rerouted into wherever in your sales funnel it needed to go. But because you didn't look at your numbers, you didn't know, you made a bad guess, and now you're out $10,000. And if you think about it with your accounting, it's the same thing. If you're hiring a whole bunch of people, once you start hiring people and you're not thinking about what the profit margin for every single hour that that person is working, I'm talking to you planners, right? Yeah. And you're underwater and you're paying all of this like employees' salary and taxes and workers' comp insurance. And you didn't realize that you needed to up your hourly rate to accommodate all of that. And all of a sudden you're not profitable. You have a big problem. Analytics and marketing is the same way. So if you don't want to look at your own analytics, that's fine. Hire somebody to do it. But your analytics are always in service of your marketing's ability to make you money. That is all you need to remember about analytics and their role in your marketing. Otherwise, it's going to be a crapshoot and you may or may not be wasting a hell of a lot of money on your marketing.
Yeah, money and effort, I'd say, because you could go do an amazing amount of content and get a bunch of attention. But like if that process isn't working and people are, again, falling off the conveyor belt somewhere because something's not working in that process and you don't know about it, then all that effort's for naught. And realistically, I know, especially with ads, you got to get the systems like locked and loaded really smooth before you start paying to bring people into a process that's broken. You know,
I can't tell you how many ad sets I've shut down in the past 4 months. I'm like, nope, you are wasting money. You need to fix your landing page. You need to build top of funnel audio. Like I usually know what needs to be done next, but I mean, things have changed so fast in the media buying landscape in 2021 because of privacy issues. Like I literally on strategy calls ask people how much money they're willing to lose before they get results. That's how I'm framing ads in 2021. So if you want to hire me.
No, really. Okay. Where can everyone find you?
I am at mountainsidemedia.com. I actually have a little download if people are interested. It's the 5 Google Analytics reports that every wedding and event pro should be looking at.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. Yeah. And I have links to my YouTube videos that are not nearly as cool as yours, Jamie.
Oh, stop
it. They're pretty standard tech guy stuff, but they'll get you where you need to go.
Yeah.
And then you can find me sometimes on social media at MTN. That's the abbreviation for mountain, MTN Side Media Co.
Cool. Well, thank you so much again for coming to bestow some of your knowledge on us. And although you did try to woo me over into being in love with analytics and it was a failed wooing, I am still very glad that you are here to kind of shed a lot of light onto something that I'd hazard to say a lot of people kind of get scared about. So I think that this rephrasing, this redirecting in our mind, hopefully you guys, our listeners, this was helpful for you. Don't be scared. We'll do it together. All right.
You've just walked down the aisle of today's episode of the Union Podcast. Thank you for celebrating today's show with us. We hope that you found a little gem of wedding wisdom from this episode. Please let us know your feedback by sharing a screenshot of this episode on Instagram. Be sure to tag @UnionPodcast so we can hear your voices. Let us know what topics you'd love to hear about on future episodes. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you prefer. Until next time, stay lovely, wedding friends.